Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we're recapping the British tabloid drama and a new dominant figure emerging in the game and everything that happened at Open Championship Week at Royal St. George's and a couple other funny golf headlines and an upcoming visit, which I'm sure everyone will be very excited to see more of, pertaining to myself potentially losing to some kids at golf, which is always fun for everyone to see. Plus, we're tuned into Space Jam, new music to bump on the golf course, and road trip sights and sounds. This week's guest is our friend of the show, Ryan Ballingy, previewing the Olympics, the stretch run, the Ryder Cup, and more. Plus, we always end with food, and all of it is brought to you by our friends at FlightScope. And Mike, a little breaking news to my golf bag, which I forgot to mention. I went up and played so successfully in Boston with my stepdad's old irons. Yeah. I just had them sent down to me in Texas, so I got a new set of irons in the bag. I was hitting it too well. I couldn't pass the opportunity up, so I brought them back down to Texas. But the yardages were a little bit off, so I needed the FlightScope Mevo when I went to the range the first couple of times to dial myself in. I figured out, guess what? I'm hitting each iron like 6-7 yards further than I was
there
before.
You go.
So, totally worth it. Hitting it straighter, hitting a little further, and I figured out exactly how much further due to the Mevo. It gives you 16 data points to tell you exactly what you're doing with your golf swing and how you're hitting the golf ball, and it's a portable item you can take anywhere with you. So again, it's the Mevo by FlightScope Golf. Check out FlightScopeMevo.com. Pros, long drivers, and amateurs like myself use it and love it. Our promo code is COL10. Again, for 10% off of your FlightScope Mevo today.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was the Open or the British Open Championship at Royal St. George's.
Oh my gosh, you can say either? Wow.
You can say either. Dustin Johnson literally doesn't give a fuck what you say.
Yes, he does not. And when we talked about this a little later on with this week's guest, but just I'm really coming around to these Dustin Johnson press conferences. Mm-hmm. I think humor is so dry at this point, and he's doing it so unintentionally. I think Dustin Johnson is now funny, which is something I never thought I'd say.
I mean, I think he was always funny. We just didn't really get it because he wasn't, you know, the number one, number two, whatever number player in the world he is now. So
yeah, exactly. He's one of the tops. He was entertainment. You're right. You can call it either way. British Open, Open Championship. Regardless, it was just fun to have the Lynx Golf setting back. Not quite the adverse conditions I may have liked to see for Lynx Golf. No kind of stray squall or, you know, gale force winds, but nonetheless it was a cool venue for a major championship.
And we certainly got the start of the week off to the right foot with DJ letting us all know that he doesn't care what we call it. We can call it whatever we want.
Yes.
And then we had Brooks and Bryson drama just continuing to boil over. This was just a fantastic start to the week.
I mean, these guys, every week, I say we don't write this, and we don't, because these headlines just get fed to us. You knew as soon as Brooks caught wind of Bryson DeChambeau hating his driver, he said he hated his Cobra driver after his first round press conference. Not great for the club reps there that were out there on site to hear that. Brooks stomping on the opportunity and immediately says after his round how much he loves his driver. So just absolutely throwing another thorn into the Brooks versus Bryson rivalry. In the end, Brooks got the better of him, kind of showed up briefly on the leaderboard on Sunday, but both of them with final round 65. So a little bit of momentum for them to end their weeks.
I just want to ask a quick question before we continue to bury the lead that was the Open Championship, like we typically do on all major championship recaps. Bryson seems to really be struggling recently. He's lost his caddy. He hates his driver. He's just going for more and more swing speed, but that seems to be hurting his game. At what point does Bryson do away with this mentality, the further he hits it, the better he is, because it's clearly not working anymore?
Or maybe we get back to that fine point last summer or fall and dial it back 20 or 30% and see how that works for a little bit. You would like to think, or you'd wonder if he's trying that right now, realizing kind of maybe has he gone too far, stretching the limits of his game and distance. So you'd have to think that he's negotiating that right now. I'd say a dial back would be the first thing I'd want to try if I were him, because there are venues like Royal St. George's where you cannot afford to consistently put yourself in the rough. Some courses you can get away with it, but courses like Royal St. George with foot to 2 foot tall fescue, it's just not doable.
You can either have your game be one that is adaptable and can work at almost any course, or you can have a game that only works at two or three courses during the year.
And dominate those courses. That's fine. There are guys that do that. Horses for courses. If you want to cater your game to that and just win at the Bombers Paradises.
If you want to be the best golfer in the world, you can't have that kind of game.
Let's transition to the guy who is the best golfer in the world right now.
The champion golfer in the world.
May not be the number one ranked golfer in the world. He's number three right now behind Jon Rahm and DJ. But the champion golfer of the year, Colin Morikawa, is hitting the golf ball better than anyone else in the world. And that's undisputed after this week's performance.
I mean, he has had consistency over the start of his career, putting up amazing numbers, Tiger-esque numbers, I think we could even say, in terms of winning major championships. And he put on a show in his first Open Championship. So we have four majors this year, and we have four different guys who won. Who's the best golfer this year between the four of them?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Seeing as John Rahm's got the number one spot in the world. And threw his hat in the ring at Torrey Pines a few weeks ago. Obviously, Phil was a miraculous win. And Hideki's going to be always around, but not at that top of the world category. So it's definitely between Rahm and Morikawa. I mean, Morikawa was just so unbelievably impressive. And, you know, last summer when he had that dominant performance at Harding Park that you and I watched, I hinted the next week that there were some Tiger-like things that I saw from that victory, the way he grabbed and seized control of the tournament and hit the dominant shots when he needed to. A lot of people pushed back at that time when I said that. I remember friends telling me, you can't make that comparison right now. Right. Now, here we sit a year later. He has another major championship. He wins his first Open Championship in his first try. He now has two major championships in eight major appearances and is already pacing in terms of his career ahead of Tiger Woods in major championships. I'm throwing that out there officially. We can go to level two of the Tiger Woods, Colin Morikawa comparisons. It's allowed.
I think we can go there. We went there with Brooks Koepka, maybe, you know, 4 years ago when he won two U.S. Opens, two PGAs.
Majors and nothing else. Yeah, exactly.
Nothing else. But he hasn't done anything recently. He's got four majors, his last one coming in 2019, and he's just kind of been hanging around there, and he hasn't really been winning.
Yeah, so, backdoor top fives, backdoor top tens. But how about, you know, let's look at the guy who's kind of winning the most and consistently and at different venues. And if we're answering that question, the answer is Morikawa winning it, you know, a perfect point-to-point golf course like Muirfield, where they play the Memorial. He won there. You know, seeing him win at Concession, a new venue, again, going over across and playing an average week of the Scottish Open, and then winning the next week in his first Open Championship, his first experience at Lynx Golf. It shows you not only is this guy's game and his head in the right place, but the game travels everywhere too. That's dangerous.
And that's impressive to see. And of course, he was able to outplay two other big names in contention, which was two of my picks, Louis and Jordan Spieth. Louis, always a bridesmaid, never a bride, except for that one time. And Jordan just couldn't get over the hump to overcome Morikawa's greatness this week. So this was Morikawa's week, and he definitely showed it. And on Sunday, he just, you know, let it go.
It was. Shout out to your picks well. They did very well. And Spieth did have a very good week. One of those weeks where technically Jordan Spieth kind of sort of did play well enough to win a major. It's just he got beat by unanimously the best golfer of the week in Colin Morikawa, who has now really, really cemented himself as a favorite alongside Jon Rahm at Tokyo in a couple weeks too.
It's going to be an interesting look at the Olympics. I know you're going to be talking about that with Ryan Balogie in a little bit, so we'll hold off on some of that. Let's give just our congrats once again to Morikawa. And if he's listening, hey, come on the podcast. Tell us why you're the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Funny story. Remember that the rash of messages I sent out when I got Nate Lashley to come on the pod a couple of years ago? In that group of messages, I sent a young Colin Morikawa with about 2,000 followers on Instagram a message congratulating him qualifying for the 2019 U.S. Open. Times have changed a little bit there in the last 2 years.
Huh? A lot. It's changed a lot.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Let's get to the rest of the world of golf here. There were some random things going on outside the Open as well.
There was a six-hole playoff on the official PGA Tour event because, you know, the Open isn't really an officially PGA Tour event sort of thing. Yeah. We had the Barbasol Championship, six holes for a playoff.
Did your dad text you about how much he loves Barbasol? Because mine did. My dad was over the moon excited to tell me that he is a Barbasol user. He says it's $250 for about 65 shaves, so you can't beat that deal, I will say. That's a pretty damn good deal.
My dad was a Gillette guy, and, you know, good for him. I don't use either of those products.
I think I'm a Gillette guy through and through. Shout out to Gillette Stadium as well. A little rubbed off on me there. But yeah, six-hole playoff, and Seamus Power got the win. A guy I've mentioned a few times and put a dollar on here and there in my weekly picks on Twitter, which are at Course of Life 1. Yours are at MWRINC, but was watching out for him for a bit. So it was good to see the Irishman get the win in a marathon playoff. Another one here. This went six holes, and JT Poston, Mike, up four shots with four holes to play, blew that lead, starting with a 7 on 16. It was an ugly scene for him, but nonetheless, shout out to Power for getting the W.
Meanwhile, over on the LPGA Tour, they had a team competition. It was great.
Yes, that's right. The Jutanagarn sisters, Aria and Mori, I think they're heading over to Tokyo as well, too. They got it done at the LPGI. And then the other LPGA little storyline I wanted to mention, shout out to a past guest of the pod, Tiffany Joe. She did officially announce that she is retiring and ending the playing portion of her career. She's still going to be around the game, teaching a lot of young golfers how to get great and be professionals in their own right as well. But wanted to shout out Tiffany Joe. She's had a fantastic impact on the tour. One of our funniest guests that we've had on here. Be sure to listen to the archives for that interview, but she's moving on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, one of our funniest guests, one of the funniest players on tour, and announced her retirement in a pretty low-key, funny way, just kind of showing up and saying, like, yeah, this is my last week.
Yep, so done. That's it. I like that. Very understated. That's all it needs to be.
Let's talk about something that kind of spanned the ocean, which was speed rounds on Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah. I saw this emerging Saturday night. Our friend Mark Baldwin, who we had on a couple months ago on the Korn Ferry Tour, found out he was going to be playing solo Sunday morning. We also find out that Kevin Kisner across the pond was going to play solo Sunday morning at the Open Championship. So there was a little bit of a battle to see who could go faster. And I told Mark, the pressure is on here because he's on the Korn Ferry Tour. Kisner's playing a major. You should be able to beat him right now. He did indeed. So Mike, you'll appreciate this. Kevin Kisner went around in 2 hours and 30 minutes, 18 holes at the British Open, and shot 69. Mark Baldwin went around the Korn Ferry Tour in Springfield, Illinois, 2 hours, 25 minutes with a 68, beat him by 5 minutes in a shot. So shout out to our buddy Mark Baldwin for getting that done with speed, too.
You know, it's a lot easier to play speed golf when you got a caddy and you play well.
Yes, very true. You can walk the fairways at lightning speed. Just one look at the yardage and go. No waiting on the tee. I mean, we don't even think about this stuff because you and I play public courses all the time. No waiting on the tee. No waiting on the green. No waiting in the fairway. It just sounds like a dream life. I love it.
I mean, you just play out in Savannah in the middle of the summer and you can do that pretty easily here.
Yeah, or that Texas heat. I feel it is that time of year where the courses are getting that lovely amount of quietness so I can get around in under 4 hours, which I did this last weekend. So that was good. That was good to say.
And you're going to get a chance to play in the heat midweek with some kids coming up in a couple weeks. And I'm sure they are just going to destroy you.
Yes, they will. I'm going to the first tee, Austin, like I said I was going to. I wanted to check out the facility. We've been talking about the first tee for weeks and months here on the podcast, our official partner of the show. We love the 9 core values in golf, and they ring through. I'm going to get to film some cool content there, but here's the really cool thing that happened. I don't know if you saw this, you know, little behind the biz right now in our little communication with our friends at the first tee. Not only are they going to let me play 9 holes golf and play foot golf, they're going to pair me with some teenagers that recently qualified for a national invitational tournament on the Champions Tour, sponsored by the first tee, Mike. So I could be playing against kids that are way above my pay grade. This could make for some extremely embarrassing content. And I know you're definitely here for that. So you're looking forward to that as much as I am.
I mean, I'm looking forward to you being there and getting thoroughly, thoroughly embarrassed. As much as possible.
By a 12-year-old that just hits lightning straight drives.
Yeah. I want you to be playing. I think to make it fair, you should play the forward tees so you can also, you know, get to the fairway a little easier.
I probably do need that. Is the crazy part is I will show everyone the first kid that I see who outdrives me. I'll get it on video
first. First tee. It'll be on the first tee.
It will be. So I'm looking forward to that visit. It's in a couple of weeks on August 5th, and much content to come from that as well too.
Can't wait for that. Coming up this week, the PGA Tour heads to Minnesota for the 3M Open. That was my attempt at a Minnesota.
I like that.
There.
Minnesota, yes.
Minnesota. Course, oh, yeah. Don't you know? Yeah.
I enjoy this tournament. TPC Twin Cities, very understated, unfortunately, because of this year's calendar and the way it gets hit on the schedule, being 1 week after a major across the pond. And of course, with the Olympics looming, took a little bit of a hit on the field, but there's still some pretty good names there from what I saw.
I mean, you still got Stuart Sink, who was leading the Open before he missed the cut from Thursday to Friday.
It was a sad scene on Friday. Yeah.
It was a bad day. And you also got, Dustin Johnson out in the field. So I'm curious how his press conference is going
to
go here.
I saw Louis' name there. I'm impressed surprised to see he's making the trip back over after that rough go this past weekend at St. George's. I'm looking out for Dylan Fratelli, finished in the top 10 there. He snuck in. He was the last guy in the field this past week at Royal St. George's. He's in the field as well too. But you'll get our full picks again on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1. You're at MWRINC to see who we go with this week.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. I just finished up a long road trip all the way back up to New Hampshire and back to visit family. I'm gonna give everyone a little look behind the curtain here for a second. Last week's episode, we recorded really early. So we kind of BS'd everything I talked about and Tuned In. No way, man. We tell the truth on this show all the time. And so I had to fake my audiobook review. I can give you a real audiobook review now because we actually listened to it. So I can actually tell you what I think of it.
Rivers of London was the title, correct?
Rivers of London, first book in a 7-8 book series by Ben Aaronovitch out of England. In here in the U.S., you may find it not named Rivers of London. You may find it as Midnight Riot, but Rivers of London is the real title. It was actually not bad to listen to an audiobook in the car on the road. Really helped pass the time a little faster than music. And my wife and I don't agree on podcasts, so we wouldn't be listening to the podcasts anyway. Would I listen to an audiobook outside of a road trip? No.
Yeah, you have to have the available time for it. That's the real key. It's like, you know, like the time's there, but like, can you make yourself available for the time to just sit down and listen to someone talk to you like that for that extended period of time? No. Glad you enjoyed it when you did, though. Mm-hmm. Congrats on making it back in one piece as well.
It was good. Nice. And I know you watched a movie that you can't spoil for me because I'm about to watch it this week.
Yeah. I'll give you one mini spoiler.
Yeah.
Jordan's still better than LeBron. Jordan's the GOAT.
You watch the new Space Jam.
This is rare grounds right now.
Well, I'm about to watch it for 3-minute movie reviews.
Perfect.
So
love that.
It's on the docket.
Good. It was very 2021, extremely CGI, graphic friendly, like, whoa, look at that. You do have to pat yourself on the shoulder and remind yourself that Space Jam is a kid's movie. It is designed for kids. Yes. So it is not for a critical eye, grown adult in their 30s or 40s or something like that to really look at too keenly. Enjoy it for what it is. Won't spoil anything. I will still say that Jordan is the GOAT, but not only as an actor, but also as a participant in the game. Let's just put it that way. His GOATness shows through, especially in Space Jam 2, once you watch the final matchup. And then there's just one beautiful surprise involving someone very, very famous in Hollywood that you know, who you would not expect to see in this movie. So I'll just leave it at that. But it was overall a decent watch. I'll give it a 7 out of 10, obviously giving the original one probably an 8.5 or 9 because it's one of my all-time favorites.
Interesting.
That was the review on Space Jam 2.
Giving it a high mark when it is really not getting a high mark from most critics.
Rotten Tomatoes absolutely crushing it right now. Benefit of the doubt, since I'm a sports movie guy, I was already leaning into it and knew what I was getting into. So it was enjoyable for a Friday night watch.
All right. There you go. Let's get into this week's guest.
Yeah, let's do it. It's a guy who we've had on the show before, and he's here to kind of catch us up. Like you mentioned earlier, not only are we coming off this major, yes, we're not getting a major championship for a long, long time. This one feels like it to me in a couple of weeks right now over in Tokyo. So I'm getting the juices revved, and it was good to have Ryan Ballengee talk all things coming up in golf.
Thankfully, after the Olympics, we also get the Ryder Cup. So it's all good. We're getting all of it. You guys talk about all of it. So Ryan Ballengee, that chat with you coming up in just a moment. But first, as always, we want to let you know that this interview is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart so it's easy to view and use all day long. No more fumbling around in the dark spaces of your golf cart, dropping your phone on the seat, or even worse, Alex, dropping it onto the grass as you drive away.
That has happened to me. And it's
but not since you got a phone caddy.
I've driven to the next hole and started playing the next hole and then realized I dropped my phone somewhere on the grass. How's that for a fun find out? And you get to circle your cart back. It's an absolute mess of a scene. Nothing I have to worry about anymore now that I have a phone caddy.
No. The Phone Caddy will keep your phone locked in safely so you can stay locked into your round so that bogey doesn't become a triple bogey.
Right.
And it'll be the talk of your foursome. And it's a great gift for any golfer in your life. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a Phone Caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors, and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com to get your phone caddy. And don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com.
Next up, we've got a friend of the show and recurring guest now. He's the owner of Golf News Net, here to talk everything going on in the stretch run in golf. We've got Olympics, we've got playoffs, and a little bit of a Ryder Cup to preview coming around the corner as well. It's Ryan Ballengee joining the Course of Life. Ryan, how are you doing today?
Good, Alex. How are you?
Doing very well. Thanks for hopping back on. I know you had a little bit of time to yourself to kind of do a little disconnect and get out there, do some golf traveling as well. What sort of courses did you hit on your travels?
Well, I played in the Outer Banks, where a place I hadn't been in 25 years. So I was in middle school, and I got to play there, which was nice. And then I went up to French Lick Resort for what amounted to a pro-am event, just really one round. And then played a member guest at my club, which was like a vacation because you really can't pay much attention to anything other than that during all the golf and drinking that you do. So very familiar places for the most part, but it was great to just be able to kind of have fun playing golf and not think about some other stuff for a while.
Seriously. Yeah. So I know the member guest weekend. I'm not a member myself, but that's a very big weekend for a lot of golfers like yourself. How did it go out there? How'd you fare?
Well, I've been a member of my club. It'll be 10 years in November, and I'd never played in it.
Wow.
Just had never had the weekend work for me. Usually it was US Open weekend, and it was this year, but I just kind of made the choice to do it, to try it, to finally get in and go for it. And we had a great time. I played with my son's best friend's dad from school. And we only played golf ever together in these charity tournaments for the school, and played, frankly, quite drunk. And I didn't really know his skill level other than that he's a good athlete and played collegiate tennis and was a great water polo player and swimmer and but, you know, not necessarily as good as a golfer, but he played some of the best golf I've ever seen him play. I mean, he lit up some teams to their dismay, and we won our flight and then lost in the shootout. But that we advanced out of the flight was pretty awesome. We did it by just a half point.
Nice. Always good to see when your partner comes through like that in a big moment in front of the home club, too. Shout out to him as well.
He played great. And then I got a little lucky in the final day and kind of rallied and did my part. So it was a good little team effort. It's nice to have a partnership where both people can contribute. So it was good.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Good to have the interplay between the two partners, the member guest weekend, all important for the golf psyche for the rest of the season as well. Let's talk about the big boys who play for real and talk mainly about the last major championship that we just saw, which was the commanding performance from Colin Morikawa Open Championship being his second major now in only 8 tries at major championships. What impresses you the most with his game, particularly what you saw this past weekend at Royal St. George's?
I mean, Colin Morikawa is a generational ball striker. I mean, he just doesn't miss that much. And I think that's what makes him extremely dangerous, is if you put yourself into that kind of position often enough, you're way more than everybody else. You're just going to, by virtue of volume, be a contender week in and week out, whether you putt well or not. And if you putt really well, you're probably going to win. And that's what happened at Royal St. George's. He played a tremendous tournament, tee to green. He played very intelligently. He played aggressively, but to his targets. He didn't kind of overreach. He had a sound strategy. And when he got into trouble, he got up and down. 15 was huge yesterday. And then he putted really well. I mean, above average for him, which, again, if you're that good of a ball striker, you putt above average, there's a really good chance you're going to win the golf tournament. And that he managed to win a second consecutive major in his debut is first, unprecedented in golf, but two, incredible to show how fast of a learner he is. And to have won both of those majors with bogey-free final rounds tells you the kind of mental approach that he has and the confidence that he has in his game plan to not reach, to not kind of struggle at all. Not that he made it look super easy, but it was really smooth. And at no point did it seem like, especially in the final 3 or 4 holes, that it was going to spiral out of control and open the door for Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, the up and downs were just massive. And it looked like not only was it a ball striking exhibit, he was having fun out there, kind of like shaping shots, hitting windows, hitting things that he wasn't used to hitting on the other side of the pond. So that was very cool to see. And then, yeah, truly dominant. And he is a generational ball striker indeed. So now he's taking his game to Tokyo with some of the other world's best now as we preview the Olympics, which are coming up in just a week now. Talk to me about kind of what this is going to look like for the athletes. From what I see, you know, there's very strict protocols in place and there's a limited amount of activities that they can even do. They seem pretty sequestered at this point before the tournament even gets going. There's going to be limited to no fans at all. What do you think the vibe's going to be like on the golf side, specifically in Tokyo next week?
I'm very curious how that's going to work out. And I guess we'll get a little bit of a sense of whether it'll be more like pandemic golf, like early pandemic comeback golf of, yeah, there's kind of a weird intensity to it. You kind of had to drive yourself, really. You had to find something in yourself to get where you wanted to go. Or is there going to be this inherent motivation of trying to win a gold medal? Because that's obviously an opportunity you're only going to get so many times in your life. I'm very curious how it's going to look. For that reason, I mean, if there were going to be some level of fans, if it were going to feel somewhat like the tournament resumption of tournament golf that we've kind of gotten used to in the last couple of months, I think it would be extremely exciting. And I still think it's going to be exciting for these players. I mean, Colin Morikawa talked about it yesterday after winning the Open, that he gets to call himself an Olympian for the rest of his life and that's a big deal to him. And I think that's probably the prevailing sentiment of the players who chose to play in this instead of the ones who chose to maybe skip an opportunity if that was afforded. I don't know. Yeah, I guess
definitely.
I'm very interested to see what it's going to look like on the business end. Like the early portions, I mean, it's a no-cut event. You kind of play your way into it. If you're not playing great, okay, you're still in the Olympics. But two questions, I guess. Will there be any rash of WDs when it becomes clear a player is not going to win so that they can get out of there? And if they want to stay for the closing ceremony or not, but you know, maybe they get out of there. Or, you know, at what point does it become a truly intense golf tournament? Because I don't feel like in 2016 it felt that way until the championship round. And then it really seemed to kind of feel like a big deal golf tournament. So I hope that comes through in all of this. I hope it comes through in a lot of the events because of a lack of fans. But, I'm very curious where these guys will find motivation to propel themselves to the medal stand.
Yeah, and on the men's side, so real quick, we got four Americans in Morikawa, Bryson, Xander Schauffele, and JT. Obviously, Hideki Matsuyama's gold medal chances, maybe, and then the South Koreans is a storyline we've been following. Siwoo Kim and Sung Jae-im trying to avoid a potential military stay, but with a medal win. There's a lot going on the men's side. What are you most looking forward to seeing in terms of which specific golfer are you looking to see kind of capture a medal or at least capture a headline on the men's side?
Well, I guess from the Korean perspective, I'd be interested in either Sungjae or Siwoo getting on the medal stand, because that could get them out of required military service. So that might
wild,
which is just a crazy gauntlet to lay down there at somebody. But that's on the line for both of them. So I'm inherently interested in that. I think Rory McIlroy I'm really interested in, because he's playing for the Republic of Ireland. He's not playing for Great Britain, because that's how Ireland rolls in golf. They combine Ireland and Northern Ireland to make one Irish team. So he's sticking with that being Irish. I think that the political ramifications of that are really interesting, particularly right now, because there is a kind of resumption of unrest in Northern Ireland for a variety of reasons. So what's the impact of that if he medals? And then, you know, someone like a Victor Hovland or a Joaquin Niemann, who represents a country that, I mean, no offense against Norway or Chile, but they're not golf countries, at least as we think about it. So if they medal in golf, right, that could be a huge deal, not only for them personally, but potentially for the sport and an investment in that sport moving forward. So I kind of would like to see, you know, no offense to the American players who I would be rooting for as an American, but, or John Rahm is a guy who's become an adopted American, basically. But I would rather see some unlikely winners than the most likely.
Nice. And let's talk about the women's side as well, too. We've been jokingly referring to the LPGA Tour as the quarter tour, and I know you cover it inside and out and have for a long time. Those sisters have been absolutely dominant. They're both heading to Tokyo now. Is it crazy to think that we could see a 1-2 sister podium if the quarter sisters are both on their game? And what are you looking forward to most on the women's side for Team US specifically, and Lexi and Danielle as well?
I mean, it's possible. I mean, Nelly is definitely the best player in the world right now, and she's earned that moniker with the performance of the Women's PGA Championship to get her first major. She's got 3 wins this year. She's just kind of become this unstoppable force. But that's not to say that she's so far head and shoulders ahead of someone like Imbi Park or Jin Young Ko. Se Young Kim has not had her best season, but she was great last year. On the American side, I think we have 4 great players, but 2 in particular in the quarters that are playing well. Lexi played okay at the Dow Great Lakes Bay Invitational, the team event this past weekend. Danielle Kang hasn't played as great in 2021 as she did when they started resumption in 2020. But she's still obviously got a lot of talent and a great opportunity in front of her. I think probably our best bet to medal is Nelly, and then Jessica after that. And then you're probably going to be, odds are you're going to be battling at least one Korean player, because they have the full complement too. Actually, they don't. They have 3. Or no, they have all 4. But they're going to have the full complement, you know, 4 players, just like the Americans do.
Yeah.
And they're the most likely to kind of take up that medal stand space other than the Americans. I think you could throw Brooke Henderson in there too. It'll be interesting to see how they acclimate to the golf course. Japanese golf is kind of, at least this particular golf course, kind of tight. Very small targets. It's not kind of your traditional wide open golf course you might expect in parts of the United States. So there's a little bit of strategy here, and I think it'll actually make the women's tournament a little bit more interesting than the men's tournament.
Definitely. Yeah. Glad you shout out Brooke Henderson too. Definitely watching out for her chances to medal, and the American storylines will be exciting. You mentioned the course, which is a perfect segue to my next question already. You described us what that venue could look like. And for us American golf fans, it's going to be some pretty early viewing from what I can tell because of the time difference. Are you going to be fully watching like Open Championship mode, like 1-2 a.m. wake ups, or what's your plan for viewing? Because I know we got some tricky hours for golf fans coming up.
I have two kids, so the odds of me making it that later are pretty low. They're pretty bad.
I figured, yes.
But I'll probably wind up recording it as best possible and then trying to watch it back in the mornings. Yeah, that's kind of the unfortunate nature of this Olympics. I mean, with Rio, it was really easy. What, an hour behind, hour ahead, whatever it was. But easy viewing for people in the United States, depending on which time zone you were in. And now that's obviously not the case in Tokyo. So.
Big time rise and shine moment.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, that's the reality of it. And that's, I'm sure that makes it difficult from NBC's perspective to try to figure out when to put where and on what channel to try to get maximum viewing for a lot of stuff that's going to be showed live on cable and then on tape delay, probably on NBC in some mixture. So it's going to be hard for pretty much everyone that's watching the Olympics to kind of get maximum enjoyment out of it. But I guess for the golf, it'll probably be just recording on DVR and viewing in the morning.
Yeah, I think that's the plan. Indeed. It's Ryan Ballingy joining us. Golf News Net is his site. You can follow him at Ryan Ballingy on Instagram and Twitter. Let's get into some quick shot questions for the last few moments right now and touch on everything going on in the world of golf as well, too. Speaking of Olympics, let's just get a quick shot answer from you. Other than golf, what's your favorite Olympic sport to tune into?
I mean, it's swimming, probably. My son's starting to get into competitive swimming. He's 8. And I think I have more of an appreciation now for it that, you know, to watch what the preparation is like, even for little kids, even for middle school kids, to get ready for races and the work that they put in and the repetition. I mean, we talk about repetition in golf of beating balls over and over and over again, but the amount of energy you have to expend to just do lap after lap after lap after lap and get faster and faster and faster. The commitment to that is pretty incredible to me. I guess behind that would be gymnastics.
Yeah, definitely swimming, gymnastics, the top two for me as well outside of the golf. And I'll be trying to tune in to see if Team USA basketball has any sort of success at all. Let's talk about one other golf event coming up later this year. I want to tease the Ryder Cup real quickly. The standings look a little different to me. I'm seeing, so we got only 6 guys that are actually going to make it, and then a whole bunch of captain's picks coming our way. So there's a million different directions that we could go here in the next 6 to 8 weeks. But I guess who are maybe a couple of names that you're looking at to potentially slide into a Team USA Ryder Cup spot that we may not be looking at right now?
Well, if you look at the ranking, the guy that's sitting just outside the top 6 because of his runner up in the Open is Jordan Spieth. So he's practically a mortal lock at this point. Phil Mickelson is not a mortal lock to make the team, but I feel like he almost has to get the nod because of winning the PGA Championship. And then you've got any number of guys that kind of sit in there at 8 through 12 spot. And I wonder if Stricker is just going to pick him down the line and round it out that way. I really don't know what he's going to choose to do at this point. And I think that's the intrigue of this whole thing, is that he has the opportunity to do something that's never been done in the Ryder Cup, at least in the modern era of the Ryder Cup. And that is have hit by hand pick half the team. Typically, I mean, even in the era when you've had 4 captain's picks or 3 captain's picks or 2 captain's picks, I mean, yeah, that's a percentage of the team, but usually it's not substantive enough necessarily to change it. I mean, especially when it was 2 picks. And now you've got Stricker thinking, all right, well, I've got my hand in the cookie jar on pretty much the whole team because I can pick pairings. If I feel like among the 6 qualifiers, I can have someone off the current roster that I can add in that would make a great teammate for Colin Morikawa, Dustin Johnson, Bryson, Brooks, JT, and Xander. I mean, that's the 6 who are auto-qualified right now. We still have some time. And then you've got Spieth, Reed, Harris English, who I feel like has to make the team because he's a top 10 player in the world right now. You got Patrick Cantlay, who's a top 10 player in the world. And then you've got just kind of sitting at the bottom, just kind of lurking around. You got guys like Daniel Berger, Tony Finau, Webb Simpson, Scottie Scheffler, Kokrak. Mickelson's 17th in the ranking because he hasn't done anything this year other than win the PGA Championship.
Yes, by the way, he won the PGA. Yes.
Is that enough to put you on the team and leapfrog all of these guys? Yeah. I mean, I could see him easily leapfrogging Horschel, Kokrak, Scheffler, even Berger for that matter. But and Simpson, actually. But how much of that is going to be just because he won the PGA. So I think if you look down to like number 10, if you look down to Cantlay, I feel like you got to pick the top 10 where they stand today. I would argue you almost have to pick the top 11 because I think Daniel Berger is really good or going to be really good in this format. So then do you just shove Phil in the 12 slot and kind of hope it all works out? That's the intrigue to me, is what is Stricker going to do with all this freedom that he has?
Yeah, so it's a lot of freedom, but in reality, if we're looking at the way guys are in form, it may only be about two or three true genuine picks that he has to slide out and make on his own cognition. So that'll be interesting to follow, definitely. One other thing I know you follow really well on Twitter, which is one of the many reasons why I love following you again, Ryan Ballingy joining us here, is you're big on pressers on tour. You love tidbits from press conferences and highlighting the voices on tour. We've got Brooks versus Bryson going on. Rory's more honest than ever. DJ has like these amazingly dry flatline answers that just have me rolling. My question for you is, who are your favorite pressers on the PGA Tour right now?
You allude to it with DJ. I mean, DJ, I don't know if he is intentionally dry funny with what he says, or he's just,
yeah,
this is who he is. I really don't know the answer to that, but I think he is smarter than people give him credit for. And I think he has a really good sense of humor. I think it's a lot of it is on purpose, trying to be dry. John Rahm is a great listen. He really gives thoughtful, interesting answers, a reasonable insight to who he is. And I've never had a bad conversation with him privately either. So I think that is not a shtick. That is who he is. Morikawa is great. I mean, he is a very good mix of insightful, funny, and interesting, and just a humble guy. I mean, a guy who's now a two-time major winner, but he just seems very reasonable, very, very normal. And I think that's really important. For people to be able to see that. I feel like this era of younger players approaches the media for the most part, not universally, but for the most part, very differently than the players that were trying to be Tiger proteges in his era, where they were dicks to the media and they didn't really want to say a whole lot because they thought that's what Tiger was trying to do, was to kind of be confrontational
and standoffish,
and standoffish, and to not say much and not reveal much, lest one of your opponents learns something and uses it against you. I don't think any of these guys really think or care about that. I think they are willing to reveal a side of themselves that makes them more interesting and more accessible for people. And I think that's good. So I mean, DJ is my favorite for a variety of reasons, but Spieth, Rory, Colin, John Rahm, all really, really good. And sometimes if you just want to listen to someone take a dump on a lot of people, then Brooks Koepka is your great listen.
Absolutely. Tour is in a really cool place right now, and there's a lot of great golf coming our way in the next couple months. Thank you for setting the stage for it all. Ryan Ballingy, Golf News Net. Check out the website. Great source for news, updates, and information on everything going on in the men's and women's game. Ryan, looking forward to stay tuned and play well also.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it.
And we're back. Great chat there with Ryan Ballingy. We are all so excited for Tokyo to just really not even sleep so that we don't have to deal with those tape delays that we typically would get. And it's the Olympics. It's coming up. I'm curious to see how many events get canceled for COVID because it's already starting to pile up over there. So
I know there's tests stray left and right here, and I'm hoping it doesn't hit the golf community too hard right now. There's a little bit of a scare in the last couple of weeks, but hopefully guys are getting there safe and sound to have the tournament go off without a hitch. You're right. It's going to be uber, uber early. Big time DVR situation, especially for guys like Ryan with two little kids. No shot in hell you're getting up that early to watch. So Definitely DVR mode. Unfortunately, like the Twitter Olympic spoilers during the day, that's going to be full on a thing here in the next couple weeks. So if you're averse to those and you want to wait for the night to watch the Olympic broadcast formally on NBC, it is going to be a Twitter lockout for you in the next couple weeks.
And let's face it, we're not going to get that much golf in prime time on NBC. So,
you know. No, we're not. We're sticking to Golf Channel. We're having fun. We're going to enjoy our mornings, and we're going to have a couple of great tournaments, men's and women's, out there in Tokyo.
Let's talk a little baseball. You know, I found myself in the Fenway area on a Thursday evening, just kind of troping around, hanging out with some friends and during my trip up there.
Love that.
This is how out of tune I am with baseball. Didn't even realize the Yankees were in town.
Yeah, the best part is it was in New York. And the second best part was there were COVID tests that postponed the game that you thought was there, which wasn't even there. That's how tuned into baseball you are right now. But
I mean, it seemed like there were fans going into the stadium. So it was like, there's gotta be stuff going on here, right?
Maybe tour or something like that. Who knows? Bleacher bar was probably packed on a Thursday night out there in center field. But regardless, a crazy weekend series for the Red Sox and the Yankees. It started off with the Thursday return from All-Star Week, getting postponed because of COVID tests on the Yankee side. They ended up playing the rest of the weekend. There was a rain delay that shouldn't have been, and then it started pouring rain. There was a fan throwing a baseball at an outfielder at Yankee Stadium. All sorts of things going on the Red Sox-Yankee series, but the bottom line is the Yankees did get done what they needed to this weekend, so there was a blip of hope for you Yankees fans. Still a long way to go in the AL East, though, and the Red Sox do still remain supreme.
Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yeah, let's do it. Brought to you by our friends at Toasty Snacks. Love these Toasty Snacks. Again, played a great round last Saturday, and I'm telling you, that Toasty bar on the ninth hole is now a guaranteed part of my daily routine. I love it. It keeps me going. It's the fuel you need. Check out Toasty.com/COL. Our promo code is COL20 for 20% off your Toasty Bites. And we got to get to it. I teased it on social media for a couple days now. We're always about these strangely weird, viral, could they be real? Are they real? Yes, they really are real food combinations. The new one this week is a Kraft macaroni and cheese flavored ice cream. Mm-hmm. Mike, would you ever lay your tongue on that?
I don't think so. And I'm trying to think, if you gave me either the Kraft mac and cheese ice cream or the yellow mustard ice cream.
Yes, we talked about that recently.
That we had from French's, the French's yellow mustard ice cream. Correct. You gave both of these to me and told me I had to eat one. I might still be sitting here trying to decide.
They're both agonizingly strange flavors. I am making a trip to the grocery store chain that has a couple locations in Houston where I might be able to lay my hands on this in the next couple weeks. So stay tuned. I think I'm going to try and search this out because I'm very curious what a mac and cheese ice cream tastes like. Can you put chocolate syrup on it? Why not? I don't know. Do you put butter on it or something? What a weird world we live in right now when this is an actual product.
I mean, at that point, just put whatever you want on it. It's going to, you know, you do you, man. You do you.
Kraft mac and cheese ice cream. It's Van Leeuwen, if you want to look it up. Van Leeuwen, some sort of.
I'm pretty sure they're sold out. I think I heard they're sold out now, but they're doing some sort of contest where you could still win a pint.
I'm going to search the store in Houston. I'll report back in a couple weeks on that. But that's the newest weird food combination to hit our news feed. Speaking of ice cream, I know you got back up to your old stomping grounds. And if you follow the Always End With Food Pod Instagram account, which is where our food podcast resides monthly, you would know that we're big aficionados in the ice cream game as well, too.
Yes.
Mainly at fault to you because you're obsessed with New Hampshire ice cream.
Well, I mean, first of all, you got to realize that New England is the highest consuming region of ice cream, no matter the season, per capita in the United States.
Good to know.
So we appreciate our ice cream. I live in a tourist town with maybe three ice cream places. I can go back up to New Hampshire and within 30 minutes. I can go to one of any dozen of ice cream places and they're all going to be great. So there is a official New Hampshire ice cream trail, which I've never done, but it will take you all summer and it will take you all over the state. So New Hampshire ice cream is some of the best, in my opinion, just like New Hampshire maple syrup is some of the best.
What was your favorite flavor you had in the trip home?
Well, I only got ice cream once when we went out, and I got a coffee ice cream with Butterfinger pieces in it. It was very good.
That's a sneaky combo right there.
Yeah, it was very good.
Okay, nice work there, sir. Shout out to ice cream making a big appearance on hashtag Always End With Food. Again, check out Always End With Food. Next week, we'll be dropping a new episode monthly on there as well. Thank you to tuning in for Course of Life, and we'll see you next week.